A strong line of thunderstorms swept across the state yesterday. In central Iowa, it knocked out power to almost 40,000 Des Moines area Mid-American Energy customers. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's time for our Friday News Buzz. Look back at the week, buzzing from one news story to the next. We'll get an update on those power outages. Also, how recent rains have helped the drought situation. And also, Dubuque native Brooks Whelan will soon be one of six new cast members at Saturday Night Live. We'll talk with former SNL cast member, Cedar Falls native Gary Kroger, about what lies in store for Brooks. Strap on your seatbelts, an Iowa News Buzz after this news from NPR. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today it's a News Buzz edition of our program. We like to do this, especially on Fridays, to look back over the week and touch on a number of news issues, news items, news developments that we haven't been able to talk about up to this point. Perhaps you heard them covered, and we like to chat about several of them. I think we've got about a half dozen, including an update on those thunderstorms that caused a power outage to almost 40,000 Des Moines area residences. We'll find out how many are still without power and an update on just how much damage was done to power lines and what causes it. Turns out flying trampolines were part of the picture. We'll find out about that. Also, the Iowa DNR has just issued its latest water summary update, so we'll find out if the precipitation we've been having lately has helped our drought situation and how the DOT is helping to make some, hoping to make some extra cash by selling sponsorships for the state's 37 interstate rest areas. So perhaps you want to sponsor one of them. You can find out how later on in this program. Finally, at the end of the hour, you may have heard Dubuque native Brooks Whelan. He's a comedian. He'll soon be one of six new cast members at Saturday Night Live. And we'll talk with a former Saturday Night Live cast member and Cedar Falls native, Gary Kroger, about what lies in store for Brooks Whelan. That's toward the end of the hour. But first of all, let's follow up on a disturbing story. This week, state lawmakers grilled administrators about illegal practices at the Iowa Juvenile Home in Toledo. Joining us now to tell us about the latest developments, Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
Hi. Remind us what investigators found, and this, I guess this was last November when they visited the Iowa Juvenile Home in Toledo.
Well, they found illegal and excessive use of isolation of the young people there, mostly girls. It is mostly girls at that facility. Most of them are there not because they have been judged delinquent by the court, but because they've been judged, the term is China, child in need of assistance. At any rate, some of those who were there as children in need of assistance were being held in isolation way beyond what Iowa law allows.
Mm-hmm. So this was being used as punishment for children, we have to admit, probably difficult to handle at times.
Difficult to handle, and that's why they're there. These are largely young people who have sort of run the course of other options, failed in one foster care, failed in another foster care. In many cases, when we say failed, we mean that they were violent, that they assaulted their caregivers in one way. That's one thing that, and that's one kind of case in which Toledo becomes the place of last resort. It's not entirely clear to me that it was being used as punishment.
Mm-hmm.
It is being used, and it continues to be used in a much, much scaled back way now.
Mm-hmm.
For controlling the young people when they're out of control, harming themselves or others.
Okay, so yes, of course, these are minors, and so there was deemed to be excessive or illegal restraints used, and an action was taken, a remedy was found, but nevertheless, you went to a rather lengthy discussion, 3 hours of state lawmakers talking to administrators having to do with the DHS, also with this Iowa Juvenile Home in Toledo. What were the concerns of lawmakers?
Well, it's clear that they have eliminated those illegal practices, but the main concern that came from lawmakers was concern that this would not reoccur in the future. The home in Toledo is operated by the Department of Human Services, like many other state facilities around the state, and DHS facilities in general are not, they are, you know, they supervise themselves. There isn't, except for fire and safety inspections, there is no supervision beyond that, beyond the, you know, the normal supervision of the governor appoints the director of the Department of Human Services. He, you know, he oversees the situation. And but some long, because of this incident, which has, you know, proven to be so shocking to people, they want to see some kind of supervision of that. The DHS director, Chuck Palmer, said that he is open to that, and that will be one of the things that the governor's task force will be considering as they have hearings on the situation at Toledo.
You've talked to some people on this issue. Who have you talked to? Because I know you have some tape of some people that we want to hear their perspectives.
Well, the head of the Disability Rights Iowa, she's the new director of this organization, which is federally funded, and they're advocates for disabled people. And in Iowa, the law is written that that includes young people who are in these facilities. And she was the new director. And she, as the new director, decided to step up monitoring visits. And so she that's when this abusive practice came to light, because it was her first monitoring visit there. And she is very clear that these are, by and large, young people who have been removed from their homes. They have not; they're not delinquent children.
Let's listen to her again. And her name again is
Her name is Miss Hudson.
Okay, let's listen to Miss Hudson.
When we Iowans removed these children from their families because these children were being abused, we took on a responsibility and said we were going to do better. Let's do it.
The name was escaping me. That's Jane Hudson with Disability Rights Iowa. And then the other person who was really in the hot seat is this interim director, or I guess his title is interim superintendent at Toledo. The person who was in charge when this inspection happened is no longer in charge. Mark Day is the interim superintendent. He was really a very impressive figure in his frankness in this hearing. He, in his earlier job, was at the other juvenile home in Eldora, which is mostly boys. And so they have tapped his expertise and talent to run the place until they can find a new director.
And he was commenting on the structures themselves, wasn't he?
He was. That was a new thing that a lawmaker said they had not heard before, and that was concerns about the safety of the buildings themselves at Toledo.
Let's hear what Mark Day had to say about that.
They're built in the 20s and 30s, three floors. Yeah, it's really poorly suited to safety, security, observation, interaction, and socialization. Other than that, they're fine.
But you know, the facility had an $8 million expansion not too long ago, and they were already and the area that they expanded, that's where these isolations were being done. So there'll be a careful look, I'm sure, by the governor's task force on even the possibility of shutting down those new areas where the young people are isolated.
And the recommendations from this task force, we can look forward to when?
Well, they're having I'm not sure when they'll be finished, but they are having a couple of hearings. They had one this week. And I feel I should point out that, you know, they are hearing from people who have really benefited from this institution in Toledo. They heard from one young woman who bounced from foster home to foster home to foster home, ended up there. And she's now, you know, turned her life around. And she says the home at Toledo saved her life. So, you know, I think they'll probably be getting a comprehensive picture of the situation at that home.
Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio, thank you for catching us up on the latest developments in this story from Toledo.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Okay, IPR's Joyce Russell there. Let's move on to a story that may interest you. Perhaps you have some money and would like to see your name, your company's name, at a rest stop in Iowa. The Iowa Department of Transportation is hoping to make some extra cash by selling sponsorships for the state's 37 interstate rest areas. And here to tell us about that is Steve McMiniman. He is the Iowa Department of Transportation's Rest Area Administrator. Hi, Steve. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So how will this work? How will you decide who gets what rest stops? What's the process of supposing there is interest out there, which I assume you believe there is?
Well, we think there is. What the sponsorship of interstate rest areas was authorized by the Federal Highway Administration a little over a year ago. The program allows for monetary contributions to the DOT to help offset the cost of operations. And in exchange for that, the sponsor would get an acknowledgement signs, two signs actually, one on the main line and one in the building.
Mm-hmm. So are these are plaques? How will we notice that as visitors? Will they be readily apparent?
The main line signs are fairly large. They're 6 foot by 4 foot. The typical blue and white rest area signs will be the base. It'll say this rest area is sponsored by, you know, Iowa Public Radio or whatever it says there. And then that'll be fairly large. It'll be right at the exit of the interstate to the rest area. There'll be a similar sign inside the building that's obviously smaller than that, but it'll have the exact same message. It's an acknowledgement that someone has contributed to the sponsorship, not only of the rest area operations, but that those funds could be used for any other highway expense as well.
How did you at the DOT get this idea? Are other states doing similar things with their interstates?
Some states are. There was a big push from the state of Virginia here over a year ago. They really want the complete, I'll say, whole hog. They were sponsors everything they did, the janitorial, the vending, all the lawn care, all that. Other states have scaled back, following more of the FHWA guidelines and just asking for soliciting contributions to help offset the costs.
Mm-hmm. And the result, the costs they're needing to be covered is what, budget shortfalls or what?
Well, we're always looking for, money for to support the system. You know, we've had the gas, fuel tax stuff we've talked about. This is a program that I think can be really a win-win for us. In the last week, I've had a number of calls of people, more asking questions, some interest. Don't really know where we're going to go with that, but it's a pretty good opportunity to get your name out in front of a lot of traffic, on a daily basis.
Right. So when we talk about these 37 interstate rest areas, how much traffic does, do you keep track of how many are well visited, how many a little bit less visited?
We do, and we have it in the request for proposals as well as our media guide that we have the ADT on the main line as well as the annual visitation at each of the rest areas. And as you stated, some are more than others, and I think those will be the ones that probably are the most attractive. But again, we don't know. It's the program allows for a sponsor to have one building, two buildings, or the entire state. So it's kind of a different program for us because it's high bid rather than low bid, where we always, we've always awarded contracts on low bid, but this will be high bid.
Mm-hmm. Steve, do you have any idea of the type of companies which wish to be associated with rest areas that wish to brand to the name of Iowa and the interstate stops?
Well, we've seen other states have been successful with like insurance companies or Geico was a big sponsor at one of their states. We've heard from trucking or companies that would like to, get involved in the program. It could be McDonald's. It could be any number of large companies may be interested in it because it's not a real expensive program, and again, there's value in having your name. Yeah. Every so often going down the road. So.
Let's just say I'm a company head or I'm in charge of this in my company. I got some loose change rolling around in my pocket. What do you think it'll cost me to sponsor a rest stop on the interstate in Iowa, Steve?
Well, the minimum bid will be $2,500 per year, and these are three-year contracts, so that it's $7,500 will be the minimum bid we'll accept. If we were to sponsor all the rest areas, all 37 of them at the minimum bid, that would be $277,500, but it could be half the rest area sponsored for twice the money. We just really don't know.
Mm-hmm. Just by chance, I'm thinking back about Iowa rest stops and traveling the country and stopping in Iowa rest stops. And I'm not just saying this to you because you're the rest stop administrator at the Iowa DOT here in Iowa, but I think Iowa rest stops have a really good name.
We do. We get far more compliments than we ever do complaints about our system. It's important to us that you know, some people, that's the only stop they'll make in Iowa is at a rest area. And, you know, it's important to leave a good impression of those travelers. And that's, we get those comments all the time that say, wow, I've been coast to coast and these were the nicest we've found, you know, and that makes us feel good too. So.
Yeah, right. Well, I suppose on the other side, what will you anticipate, or have you had any people getting upset when they hear about this, that a familiar local landmark like a rest stop on an interstate will have a name, like people get upset with baseball stadiums all of a sudden having a name attached to them?
We haven't heard anything this time around. When we did some last fall, we kind of were starting this process, and there were some people that didn't think that was a good idea. But I think all in all, once they see, you know, the benefits of what we're, you know, offsetting the costs here, I think people will, you know, I don't foresee a lot of controversy mm-hmm. with it.
Okay, Stephen, finally, before we say goodbye, tell us how people can find out more about this new program.
Okay, it's on the DOT webpage under the purchasing section. That would be where the request for proposals is located. The RFP went out last Friday, and the letting will be October 9th. There's a media guide in there that will give you kind of a question and answer, quick little summary of the program that's helpful too, and that's on the rest area webpage. So everything's online, and it should and then my name is on there too, so they can always call me. So.
Steve McMenamin, thank you very much, Iowa Department of Transportation's rest area administrator. Good luck with the new program.
Thank you very much.
River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, buzzing through a number of items that maybe we heard a little bit about this week and we want to hear more about, as in this case, we heard earlier this week a report by Iowa Public Radio's Dean Borg that the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission is still, well, dreaming about a new land-based casino in the Davenport area. And Dean Borg is joining us now to discuss the situation for a couple minutes, the situation in Scott County. Dean Borg, hi.
Hello, Ben.
Joining us by phone. Introduce us to—this is kind of complicated, and your report did a good job of explaining it, but introduce us to the players in this casino drama and tell us what's causing the holdup.
It's very complex. First of all, you've given one of the major players, the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission, headed by former Iowa State Senator Jeff Lamberti. They've been urging a land-based casino in a high-traffic area of Davenport. They want to move it off the riverboat to regain market share. It's been lost to a new casino across the river in Rock Island, Illinois, called Jumer's. Then another player would be the Scott County Riverboat Authority. They hold the gambling license. They're the nonprofit agency holding the gambling license. Davenport Mayor Bill Glubin, the Davenport City Council, they call them aldermen there. And other players, the Isle of Capri Riverboat Casino in Bettendorf, the Rhythm City Riverboat Casino in Davenport. Now, I mentioned those two because they're owned by the same people, and that's a point of contention to Mayor Gluba. That is, the Isle of Capri owns the Rhythm City in Davenport as well. And then there's Dan Keel, a casino developer who heads a group operating the Riverside Casino south of Iowa City, and he has another casino up in Larchwood in far northwest Iowa, Lyon County, there near the South Dakota border. And another proposal coming from Rodney Blackwell at the last minute. He heads an out-of-state group, and they're submitting a proposal. And so those are all the players. Now, here's what's happening, if mm-hmm. you're ready for that.
Okay. Okay, go ahead, Dean.
Well, the Keel proposal, and that's been accepted by this nonprofit group, the RDA, they like the Keel proposal. Purchase the Rhythm City Casino, now in the downtown Mississippi River, just at the edge of downtown Davenport, and then they would move that license to an area out along Interstate 80 and near Brady Street. That's a major traffic artery in Davenport, and he would build a $110 million casino hotel complex in northwest Davenport. Now, the RDA, as I said, they've adopted Keel's proposal, but the city of Davenport doesn't like that. And it provides them only 1.75% of adjusted net gambling revenue to the city, mm-hmm. and the RDA itself would get 6.4%.
So the
city doesn't like that.
So they're saying their piece of the action, to use some good gambling terminology, is just a little bit too small. So They're wanting Keel to increase that deal and turning to Rodney Blackwell? Are they playing one off the other?
They have a meeting next Wednesday night at which they probably will adopt both proposals and have those forwarded to the State Racing and Gaming Commission, which the State Racing and Gaming Commission, I talked with Jeff Lamberti a day ago, and that's the last thing he wants, but he said they've been patient and they will continue to be patient, but this 11th hour Blackwell proposal is for a $250 million casino, initially $125 million, then increasing later on, with the city of Davenport getting 4% of the net revenue there. You can see why the city of Davenport likes that one better.
Right, because this is not just a one-year 4%. This goes on in decades into the future. This is talking a lot of money, isn't it?
And the mayor and the city council had early on, before these proposals came on, they were trying to float an idea which the city would operate the casinos. And then all the gambling revenue would come to the city to fix streets and do public improvements, things like that, and lower the tax rate. So the city now is playing hardball because they own, get this, they own the Rhythm City's land on which that is based along the river. And so they have leased that from the city, and the city is not going to release them from that lease unless they get their way. So it is really very, very complicated, and others are urging the city to sue the Isle of Capri riverboat up in Bettendorf, which is operating the Rhythm City, because they contend they have monopolized that gambling area in Davenport to the detriment of Davenport. That is, Bettendorf has improved their Isle of Capri riverboat more than it's invested in Rhythm City riverboat downriver, and so they have played one off against the other, and some people are urging Davenport, sue them. Delay this now and sue them. So it is so complicated, you hardly know what's going to happen.
Right. Dean, you and I go far back enough that we can remember Iowa without any casinos, and the mere mention of it was a bit of a sacrilege before it was introduced, and now every community is feasting on the revenues this can generate. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, not only that, but you see the State Racing and Gaming Commission saying we're being patient. Well, they're being patient because they want more gambling revenue out of Davenport. They're saying you can do better with a land-based casino. Let's get on with it.
Right.
And but Davenport is angling to try to get the best deal possible. That is for the city of Davenport.
Okay, and we still the other big question we always try to answer, and we can't answer it here. But when is Iowa saturated with casinos? Where what is that point? When is enough casinos enough, or too many?
And that's the question that's constantly being asked. And of course, there was a so-called moratorium against new licenses being issued in Iowa during kind of a cooling off period here for a while. But it seems that, you know, Cedar Rapids has an application that'll be coming in now. And of course, the city of Davenport will have one. And isn't it ironic that the State Racing and Gaming Commission says, let's get on with it. We're losing market share and we want more tax revenue for the state of Iowa.
Dean Borg, thank you for catching us up on a complicated but nonetheless fascinating story. Iowa Public Radio correspondent Dean Borg, thank you.
You're welcome.
Coming up in just a moment, we had that strong line of thunderstorms sweeping across the state yesterday, knocking out power to almost 40,000. We'll hear an update about how many are still without power, even though working through the night, the crews have been. We'll hear an update on that. Also, an update on our water situation in the state after the latest rounds. And then also, another Iowan will become a Saturday Night Live cast member. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's our News Buzz edition of the program on this Friday. Let's look at a few more stories. Of course, a strong line of thunderstorms swept across the state yesterday. Maybe you experienced it. In central Iowa, it knocked out power to almost 40,000 Des Moines area Mid-American Energy customers. Joining us now, Tina Potthoff is a spokesperson for Mid-American Energy Company. Hi, Tina.
Thanks so much for having us on the show.
Now, 40,000 were knocked out. I know as of earlier this morning, it went down below 10,000. What's the latest update on how many people still are without power?
Well, as of 11:30, we currently have about 5,200 customers without power in the Des Moines metro area. We've made a lot of progress overnight. At the height of the storm, we had close to 40,000 customers without power. We were dealing with a number of broken poles and equipment that needed to be replaced. This storm in particular caused a number of items to be tossed into our equipment. We've seen everything from trampolines and garbage cans to lawn chairs that hit our poles, broke the poles, and also broke equipment. So we're gradually continuing our assessment now that we're into daytime hours, and we'll continue that as the day goes forward while also restoring power.
Mm-hmm. So that was really the origin of the power outage. You had actually some of these tall poles just snapping with the wind.
That's right. On our Twitter and Facebook sites, we've been actually showing some photos that our crews have been taking as they're making repairs around the metro area. We've seen a number of broken poles with this particular storm. We're always prepared for severe weather, of course, whether that be a snowstorm or a spring or even a fall storm for that matter, or summer storm. But in this case, we had high winds that tossed a lot of items and other debris into our equipment. And so we're seeing a number of broken poles. Right now, as of this morning when we had a storm call, we had about 50 broken poles that needed to be replaced, and there were more. That number was going up as the day went on.
Yeah, I think the weather, we had gusts of about 60 miles an hour, didn't we?
That's right. That's right. And especially on the western side of the metro area in Des Moines, we really saw a lot of damage.
Okay, a lot of work. How many crews have been out working through the night for sure?
We have 400 line workers in the Des Moines area today. That includes line workers and tree contractors. And they're not just our crews. We've called in our crews that were on call, our crews that were currently working through the storm, and also crews from outside Iowa and surrounding states. We were on a mutual assistance call last night to ask for backup, and that backup has shown up. So we're very excited that they're here to help us with mutual assistance. We help them, they help us, and so it's very nice to have them here today. We have about 400 incidents or places that we need to go to respond to at this time. So it is going to take some time as we continue to make our way through this particular event.
Yeah, 400 line workers, getting those together very quickly. What do you know, happen to know the farthest place that one of those line workers came from to visit Iowa and help out?
Well, you know, I know we've received some line workers from the Missouri area and also Minnesota, and we may have others from surrounding states as well, but it's nice to have them here because they definitely help with the workload and also the manpower. It's all hands on deck today, and I want to remind people that this is going to take some time. We're down to, 5,000 outages at this point, but with that being said, we expect to make progress today, but this could go into tomorrow, very well could go into tomorrow as we continue to assess the damage.
Okay, by the end of tomorrow, you expect almost everybody to have power back.
That's correct. We're actually looking at restoration times as we work through the day and the night today and then also into the day tomorrow. So we're looking sometime on Saturday, that our last customers could be restored.
And finally, Tina, perhaps some words of advice from you because, of course, we'll have storms in the future and we'll have downed poles and downed power lines. What do you say for people who see a power line that's down? You just stay away, right?
That's right. It's a very important safety message, especially as we're continuing to do our work. And also, as our crews are doing their work, please keep a safe distance from them so that they can work as safely and as efficiently as possible. We also encourage customers, even if you think maybe your neighbor has reported a power outage, please call us and report your personal power outage. Our number is 1-800-799-4443. People can also see progress taking place at midamericanenergy.com. We have an application on our homepage where you can view outages and see what type of progress is being made today.
Tina Potthoff of Mid-American Energy Company, thank you for your time. I'll let you get back to it.
Thank you.
It's our News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Related to all the storm that we've had, of course, we've had some precipitation. We want to check in with the Iowa DNR because it's just issued its latest water summary update. It's a snapshot of water resource trends in this latest period that's covered September 4th through just a few days ago, the 17th. Telling us about it, Tim Hall joining us by phone, Chief of the Geological and Water Survey Bureau and State Hydrology Coordinator for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hi, Tim.
Good afternoon.
So a little bit of an improvement, I'm thinking. What's the change we've seen since the last update?
Well, we took a little hiatus from doing the updates back in June. Conditions at that point had gotten much, much better. And as everybody knows, we have had very little widespread precipitation since June or late in June. So we've sort of been watching the conditions slide back downward since June. So if we compare against a year ago, mm-hmm. we're a little bit better off in the state. If you compare it against several months ago, by golly, we've kind of lost all the gains we picked up throughout the spring of this year.
Mm-hmm. So tell us the key factors that you look at when you're tracking water trends. What categories are you concerned about?
Well, in terms of looking at the drought, we look at precipitation numbers, obviously. We work with the National Weather Service and with the state climatologists to keep track of rainfall trends. We work with our own groundwater and geology staff to look at groundwater availability, particularly in areas of the state where the source of that groundwater is pretty shallow. We call it alluvium. It's a sand and gravel that you find along river valleys. We track water levels that communities and irrigators are using from those types of sources. And we also track stream flow. We look at the U.S. Geological Survey's real-time gauges that track river levels. And those are the things that sort of work together to help us understand what the hydrologic conditions are in the state. We also look at the National Drought Mitigation Center, which is out of Lincoln, Nebraska, and they're the folks who do the National Drought Monitor every week. And they look at those same things, plus a whole lot more information on a state-by-state and regional and national basis.
Mm-hmm. We've had some rain in recent days. Obviously last night's outside of the survey period that you've done here, but have we changed there in terms of what parts of the state are really in bad need of more rain?
Well, the challenging part this past few months has been right through the middle part of the state, sort of running from Boone County down into the east, sort of the Raccoon River, the Des Moines River Valley. That's really been the hardest hit drought area this year. Last year, we were more concerned about extreme western and northwestern Iowa. The areas of real concern have sort of shifted to the east a little bit this year. So I haven't looked at the precip numbers from last night's storm. When the National Drought Monitor comes out next Thursday, their cutoff date, I believe, is either Monday morning or Tuesday morning. So they will have factored in all of this precipitation into next week's drought monitor. But I think it's important for folks to keep in mind that droughts have a really long lead-in, and they have a really long recovery session. You know, it took us from January of this year until almost June to slowly wipe out the drought classification in the state.
Okay.
And that, it doesn't happen in one storm. So yesterday's rain was great. We need another one, and then another one, and then another one. and if we can keep that up through the fall, we'll make some considerable improvement in conditions.
Fingers crossed for gray skies, I guess we can say. Tim Hall, thank you very much.
You bet.
Chief of the Geological and Water Survey Bureau and State Hydrology Coordinator for the Iowa DNR. And finally today, NBC announced this week there will be six new cast members, as a matter of fact, at Saturday Night Live. One of them is a guy from Iowa. Dubuque native Brooks Whelan is one of the lucky new hires who will step in after several recent departures. It's the show's biggest overhaul since the mid-1990s. I guess this is the 39th season coming up. Whelan wrestled for Dubuque Hempstead High School in the mid-2000s. He's relatively unknown outside of Los Angeles, where he's done stand-up for the last few years. But he's contributed to College Humor and Comedy Central, included him last year on this list of top 10 artists to watch. Here's a condensed excerpt of a stand-up set he performed at the Laugh Factory.
When I was 20 years old, I blacked out drinking, and I fell asleep in my own bed, which should be a safe zone. It wasn't this evening, okay? So my roommates broke into my room and shoved a stick of butter down my pants. That's a weird thing to do. And throughout the night, it melted and congealed. And when you wake up in the morning with no idea of what happened the night before, and you see that, you don't think, is that melted, congealed butter? That's not the thought. the thought is, no! What did you do to yourself? You gotta start taking it easier at night! No! And I did what any of us would do upon finding that. I told nobody about it. I didn't say a word. And since I didn't tell anybody about it, my roommates were drunk when they did it to me. They didn't bring it up to me. So no one said anything. And I spent 8 months of my life convinced that I had the rarest STD on the planet. Positive. Because after I got out of the shower, like I take a shower right away, and I was like, find out what you have. Look it up on the internet. Google, creamy discharge around the pelvis. Oh, that's not a thing? It doesn't exist on the internet? Okay. I'm the first one with this? Great. Patient zero for new AIDS? Awesome. Spent 8 months thinking I had new AIDS.
Okay, Dubuque native Brooks Whelan, and he has been chosen as one of the six new cast members of Saturday Night Live. Joining us now to talk about Saturday Night Live, Iowa native Gary Kroeger. He was an SNL cast member in the 1980s, from 1982 through 1985. He performed with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Eddie Murphy, Jim Belushi, Martin Short, Billy Crystal. He's now creative director at Mud Advertising in Cedar Falls. Joining us by phone, Gary Kroeger. Hi.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Sorry to put you on after that clip. That was pretty racy.
I thought I was going to have to follow drought monitoring.
Yeah.
So we're on an upswing now.
Hey, I want to talk to you about your experiences a little bit. But first of all, let's remind people of some of the great work that you had on Saturday Night Live. In one of your most memorable sketches, you portray a young college student who comes out as, get this, straight.
And
we're back in the early 1980s. This is
82.
A different feel for it. And we're going to hear this clip here. Your father is your gay father is played by Howard Hessman of WKRP fame. And this skit a little edgy in that day.
It was edgy in its time. Well, go ahead and play it, and then we'll see how it plays.
Okay, Gary Kroeger of Cedar Falls with Howard Hessman on Saturday Night Live from, what did you say, 1982?
1982.
Let's go for it.
That's my boy. Not settling down. You probably got more dates than anybody on campus, and I'll tell you why. It's because you take after me, right?
Dad, please. It has nothing to do with the number of dates that I'm having. It's more the kind of dates I'm having.
What are you talking about?
Dad, you know, at college, things are a lot different. You know, people are different, and they're changing all the time. Dad, people are always changing. I'm changing.
Son, what are you getting at?
What I'm going to say to you, Dad, it has nothing to do with you. I want to tell you this, Dad, because I love you and I respect you. Dad, I'm straight. I said I'm straight, Dad. I like girls.
You and girls?
Now look, Dad, you might as well hear the whole story right now. I happen to have a girlfriend.
Stop it!
I don't want to hear about it.
Where did I go wrong? I mean, I tried to give you a nice home. I sent you to YMCA summer camp. I should have played with you more when you were a baby. I never should have let your mother bathe you.
Mother has nothing to do with this.
Oh, come on.
Now look, Dad, it's no one's fault. It just happened. I am a heterosexual. And I am not ashamed of it.
Gary Kroeger from 1982. Well, I am laughing up a fit here.
Well,
that juxtaposition was brilliant. How did you come up with that?
Well, Well, you and I gave it away. Obviously, the audience thinks it's that uncomfortable moment when a son comes home from college and tells his parents that he's gay. So the audience was like, oh, my God, is this a dramatic piece? They were so uncomfortable. And then, of course, I say, I'm straight. You realize this is my gay father. And it was a piece that I had developed, actually, with Practical Theater Company, you know, my Chicago troupe with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Brad Hall and the rest. And we brought it to SNL, and Howard Hessman, of course, just played it brilliantly. I want to add that I looked at it as really good socio-political commentary. I wasn't trying to make fun of that situation. I was actually trying to cast light on how ridiculous it is that somebody has to confess who they are. And I think, you know, I think it holds up. You know,
oh, it certainly does. And on SNL, in your 3 years there, you portrayed a number of great characters: Charlie Chaplin, Bruce Springsteen, even Joseph Goebbels. I think.
Was I Goebbels? You know, when you do SNL, you do everything that's thrown your way. I would be told to work up Yasser Arafat or Alan Alda or Tom Brokaw in a moment, and you pretty much got from Tuesday to Thursday or Friday to come up with it. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember. I hate to think that I played Joseph Goebbels, but if it was funny, yeah, I probably did.
You also played Vice President Walter Mondale at that time.
I did do Walter Mondale several times, and people don't even realize how good the impression actually is.
Still good, not even rusty after
and
all these
even
years.
Nobody knows. Yeah.
So we have this new Iowan who's coming on board at SNL.
Yeah.
You're a veteran of that that experience. Give him some advice.
Well, you know, I can give him advice. Whether he ever listens to me or not, I don't know. I didn't emerge a big star. That's no mystery. I was a working actor. I was a working comedian. I was delighted to be there. But it was a different time. My Achilles heel, believe it or not, was the fact that this is going to sound really stupid, but I was too nice a guy. Inside the organization, my nickname was No Problem Krogs, because I didn't make waves. I didn't cause problems. I took what
I got. You were Iowa nice.
Well, you know what? I was Iowa nice. And he will have no choice but to be Iowa nice. We just happen to be a nice bunch of people, sincerely. But I would advise him to look out for himself. Saturday Night Live is like everybody being on the space shuttle, but you don't realize that you have different destinations till you're already in space. So everybody's fighting for their airtime. The writers are fighting for time. The actors are fighting for time. You really have to protect yourself and protect your interests, because it is your career, and you're the only person there who's genuinely concerned about your career.
So you're a team as cast members, but you're not really a team.
Yeah, probably the same. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a description of marriage, too, isn't it? Really? But yes, you need to be a team. You need to find your friends. You need to protect each other.
Right.
But
when you come up with a sketch like you did, the one we just heard there, we have just a couple minutes left.
Sure.
So if you come up with a really good idea that makes it through the vetting, you get to choose who's in your sketch, or how does that
work?
Pretty
much. If you write the sketch, you're the producer of your sketch, essentially. You mm-hmm. cast your sketch, and you produce it. You are the person putting it on the floor. Of course, there's a director who blocks it for camera and so on. But you're in charge of it. Now, yeah, anything you see me do in a featured role back in those days, and probably of any actor now, they probably wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly the only way I could protect myself. But, you know, when you're with Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo, Martin Short, Billy Crystal, Chris Guest, that's a pretty tough standard to break through to get on the air. I mean, I struggled, but I look back now, and you played that, and I got goosebumps because I thought, you know what?
It was fun.
I did some fun stuff.
You really did, and you did a wonderful job. Do you keep in touch with any of these former cast members you were with?
Brad Hall and I probably Facebook every day, and I keep in touch with his wife, but, you know, his wife will probably get another Emmy for Veep is a superstar. So
Julia Louise.
Yeah, Louis, I saw Louis her Dreyfus. And Brad and the whole crowd and Tim Kazurinsky back in Chicago at New Year's. But, you know, in adult grown-up lives with kids, it's pretty difficult to get together. But we stay in touch.
Do you we have just 30 seconds left. Do you get a chance to get out and do some stand-up comedy or any of that old stuff?
Well, no, I don't. I'm a creative director, and I'm pretty busy. All the time. What I do, Ben, is I host every fundraiser and event I possibly can. My moments of stand-up are ad-libbing in front of people at the, you know, the MDA benefit or Habitat for Humanity. But you know what? I'm totally satisfied.
Gary Kroeger from Cedar Falls, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Saturday Night Live cast member from 1982 through 1985. We appreciate it, and we hope Brooks Whelan of Dubuque was listening to your helpful hints, Gary.
He'll do well. And Ben, say hi to your mother.
Certainly. And say hi to yours.
I will.
Okay. Well, bye, Gary.
So long.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese and Ames. Help from Jason Burns. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And joining me in the studio now, Charity Nebbe. Charity, we have a wonderful week stretching out in front of us. Tell us about it.
Well, next week on the Iowa Public Radio talk shows is what we're calling Iowa Week. And every day we're going to focus on innovative, interesting, inspirational, remarkable Iowans in many different walks of life. So on Monday on Talk of Iowa, we're going to focus on athletes, and then through the week, musicians, conservationists, horticulturists, of course, and fictional Iowans as well.
You know, when I think about what we're going to do on River to River, I'm drawing a blank because I'm so wrapped up in this show.
You're going to talk about inventors and newsmakers and other people.
Iowa, right. through periods of war,
right?
For instance, and things like that. So it'll be an interesting
Iowa
week.
Legal cases.
We haven't done it before in this form.
It's going to be an adventure, I can't wait to see what we're going to learn.
Me too. Charity Nebbe, thank you very much. Host of Talk of Iowa. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, and do join us all next week, Charity and I, with Iowa Week.